Good morning, everyone. Okay. Does everyone have the source sheet I sent last night? I guess thumbs up. Very good. So we're going to be a bit ambitious today. Today we're going to review two different topics that we learned about together. One is the topic of prospective buyers, meaning what is the status of someone who, while shopping, picks up an item and damages it in the process before they have decided they want to buy it. And also, generally, when is one liable for accidental damages in halacha? So to sort of put both of these in perspective, if you look at your source sheet, I brought you the following little vignette. It's right above source one. So I stuck with Esrogim because it's always good to buy things and use them for mitzvot. So the case is as follows. Just actually just get to the pace myself. So, while shopping for Esrogim before Sukkot, Reuven slipped and dropped an Esrog he was investigating on the floor. The Esrog was invalidated because of the damage caused by the collision. Is Reuven liable? To answer this question, we need to essentially answer the two questions we just raised. Namely, question one, what is the liability that Reuven has toward the Etrog before he decides that he actually wants the Etrog? That's question one. Question two, whatever the answer to that is, how liable should we hold someone who slips and drops something they're holding in general? What do we consider the how liable is one for slipping and damaging in the process? So we begin with the first topic, and that is called Lokea Klimina Umina Manas Levakro. And as we mentioned, and again, this is a Chazara share, we're going to go a bit quickly. There are three main Gemara which all deal with the topic of what is the liability of a prospective buyer. We start with source number one. The Gemara says as follows: Yibayalehu. They ask the following question. I wrote this in parentheses because this is the context, right? So we're talking about a sholem chifetz achameshilata. We're talking about someone who borrowed an object for a period of time, and that period of time is now over. They have said they want to return the object. Do we say that after they're done using it and they tell the owner to take it back, in the meanwhile, are they no longer a shoel, but they're still liable as a paid watchman? Or do we say no, they're like a shomer chinon, they're not even liable for geneva v'aveda? Says, we'll say that even though they're no longer as liable as a borrower, they're still a paid watchman since they had the benefit of using the object. They'll benefit the owner by maintaining that responsibility to guard the object from theft and from other types of loss. And now we get to our case. Tanya kavasa da memar. A braisa was taught in accordance with a memar's opinion. Halokelach kelim mibeta uman, a person buys vessels from the house of the craftsman, lishagram levet chamiv, to send them to the house of his in-laws. Va'amar lo, im mekablen otam yimeni, ani notin lachad mehen, v'imav, ani notin lachad lativ edvar hanasha bahen. He says, here's the deal. I am buying these, but not for myself. I'm buying them for my in-laws. So, if my in-laws decide that they're great, they like them, then I will pay for them in full. If they decide they don't want them, I'll still pay you for the fact that I showed them how much I care about them, and we'll put a dollar amount on that value of goodwill. That's the deal he makes with this person. He's not sure yet if he wants to keep these objects. Now the Gemara says, "V'nensu b'halicha chayav." If on the way to the person's in-laws these vessels break, he's liable for onsen. He's liable even for uncontrollable circumstances which render these kelim broken. On his way back, once he decides, okay, I'm not going to buy them, if on the way back to the owner they break, then he's like a nosei sachar, he's like a paid watchman who is pater from onsen. So this first Gemara, the impression that you get is that we're comparing someone who is a prospective buyer to a Shoel who becomes a Shomer Sachar. That's the impression you get. The context of this Gemara is liability for watching objects. It's the context of going from being a borrower to a paid watchman. And that is compared to the case of this person who buys an object on condition and then decides they no longer want that object. That is source number one. Then we go to our second source, in source number two, which gives you a different impression. Says the Gemara in Bava Basra Peches Amud Aleph. Gufa Amar Shmuel. Shmuel says, Hanoto klima uman levako nas biado. A person purchases takes a vessel from a craftsman to investigate it. And then, while they're investigating it, nenas biado, something happens to it and it breaks. Chayav, they are liable. And the Gemara says, Vahani milihu dekitzi dame. That is only if there is a set price for this object. It's a question as to what exactly that means, but let's say for now, he told you how much you have to pay for it. That's when you're liable. Okay. Ahu gavra de olive tivcha. There was a person who went to the butcher. Agva atma de bisra. He lifted the thigh of an animal. While he was looking at this, you know, bad luck, while he's looking at this animal, someone comes and grabs that thigh away from him. Us in the comment of Rav Yemar, so they went in front of Yemar, they made him pay for it. Even though he hadn't bought it yet, he has to pay, well, as he's looking for it, for someone who steals the object. And that is assuming that it has a set price. And then the final case, Hahu Gavadai Sig Krelid Pumnara. This is a very unfortunate circumstance. Someone's by the seashore selling these gourds. Asig Kula Alma Shoko Krakra. So everybody goes to this stand, they each start taking his produce one by one, and he can't keep track of all these people. Amr Lahu, he says, Arya Mikdash Lishamayim. Okay, you know what? They're all hectish. You can't have any of them. Also, the commander Okana, they went in front of Kahana, Amilahu, in on the Makdashar Shino Shalom. Tough luck. Once they take your produce, you can't be Makdash anymore. Because a person cannot sanctify something that's not his. But again, Vahani Milihu Dekita Damayu Avalokita Damaya Birshus Mare Kame Vishapur Akdish. This is all assuming there's already a set price for the produce. If there is no set price for the produce, then he can no longer, then it's his produce and he can sanctify it. The context of Bava Basra is that of buying and selling. It's of kinyanim, acquisitions. The Gemara states a rule here that when an object has a set price and you pick up that object with the intention of buying it, at that moment it is yours even before you pay. And in that context, again, we have this rule of the prospective buyer who is liable for onsen with the prerequisite that the object they pick up has a set price. That's Gemara number two. Gemara number three is in Nedarim. The context here is, as Nedarim is all about, vows, and specifically vows which prevent one from benefiting from another person or giving another person any benefit. So just to reference the Mishnah itself outside, the Mishnah says that if a person makes a vow that they are not going to have any benefit from a Jew, or they won't give any benefit to a Jew, they have to do business in accordance with that vow. So if you said, I won't give you any benefit, it means if I sell something to you, I have to sell it to you at higher than market value. If I sell it at the normal price, then I will be giving you a benefit. That's the Mishnah in a nutshell. And then we go to the second line, source number three, and again we have our case. Amr Shmuel, Halokea Klimana Uman Levakro Venenas Biyado Chayev. Shmuel says a person that buys a vessel from a craftsman in order to investigate it, and in the meanwhile that object breaks, they are liable. Alma Kasavar, now the Gemara makes the big statement. Well, why would Shmuel say they're liable? It must be that he holds Hanas Lokeachi. Generally, when you do a business transaction between buyer and seller, it is good for the buyer. That's what Shmuel holds. The fact that Shmuel says you're liable while you're handling the object means he thinks that sales are generally beneficial for the lokeach, the buyer. And then the Gemara quotes the other case, the case from our Masechta Bava Metzia, Tanei Kevasei Shmuel. I have a braisa agrees with Shmuel, and it goes through the whole case, but the person who buys kelim in order to give them to his in-laws and decides on the way back he doesn't want them, and the like. Okay, so if you look briefly, before we get to Tosfos, if you look briefly at the table I have for you under source number 4, essentially, we have three different Gemaros, and they give you completely different implications about prospective buyers that with different emphases, okay? The first source in Bava Metzia only discusses the case of the person who is buying an object in order to send it to their in-laws. It does not discuss the case of someone who is investigating an object to buy it for themselves. And there are no prerequisites. There's no mention of a set price for the object. There's no mention of the fact, I missed some from source number 3. The Gemara says that in order to really apply Shmuel, really I shouldn't have missed that, in order to apply the halacha of Shmuel, it has to be Zvina Harifa. It has to be a particularly attractive purchase. Or else we won't say it's Hanat Lokeach, we won't say it's to the buyer's benefit to buy it unless he's getting a very good deal. So again, in source number 1 above Metzia, there are no prerequisites mentioned, and it's only the case of buying something in order to give it to one's in-laws. We have the other case in Bava Basra, which is only the case of buying an object in order to investigate it. And there we have the prerequisite of the fact that it has to have a set price. And finally, we have Nedarim, which is not in the context of sales, it's in the context of deriving benefit, and it only mentions this prerequisite of Zvina Harifa, which means it's an attractive buy for the buyer. It does not mention the fact that there needs to be a set price, and it mentions, actually, it compares the case of someone who is investigating an object to the case of someone who buys it to sell it or to give it to someone else. So we have different implications. If you look at source number 4, Tosos basically scratches his head and tries to figure out what is the basis for holding a prospective buyer liable. It seems that we have different implications from the different topics as dictated in this table. If you look at source number 2, it would seem that the reason that you're liable is because you are a lokeach, that a prospective buyer, until they decide they don't want to buy the object, is a buyer. We assume that they will buy it, and it's theirs until proven otherwise. And that's why you're liable, for things that happen in the meanwhile. That's the context of the Gemara, that's why it needs to be a set price. On the other hand, notes Tosfos, that the first source, source number 3, indicates that it's because you're borrowing the object. Here you are, you're in the person's store, you're looking at their object, you're not paying for it. What are you if not a buyer? That's why the Gemara in Nedarim says that it has to be a particularly attractive merchandise. Why is that? Because the basis for the liability of a borrower is kol hana'a shelo. The borrower gets all the benefit. They get to use the object, they don't pay for it. Right? So that's why they're liable, and that's why the Gemara mentions Zvina Harifa. So essentially, to put this puzzle together, we have two questions to ask, and then another question within that first question. What I mean by that is, and that was a bit confusing, is, do we put all these Gemaras together? And we try to piece all the different elements together to sort of get at one halacha here? Or are they different sugyos? Okay? If they all are one big topic, if we should put all these different Gemaras together and take all the details together, then is the primary mechanism at stake here that of Shoel? Are you a borrower? Or do we say, until proven otherwise, you have purchased the object? Okay? So first we're going to explore the fact that they're all one topic. And we're going to take it from the Shoel perspective. The Shoel perspective argues, again, that while you are investigating the object, or while you are making this decision whether you're going to buy it or not, you have the status of a borrower. Now, why don't they say lokeach? Why would this perspective say that we don't assume you've bought the object yet? Well, it's for a pretty simple reason. And there are actually two explanations. You, first of all, you haven't decided that you actually want it yet. So, who says you're buying it? You're just picking it up to look at it. Why should we assume that you're a buyer? And even if you'll say, as well, as the other opinion will argue, that you're picking it up and you're buying it on the condition that you decide that you want it, who says until that condition is met, you should be considered a buyer? So that's why they're not going with the lokeach approach. Nevertheless, why are you a shoel? There is a big question here, which is a shoel gets to use the object. That's the benefit that a shoel gets. A borrower gets to use the object with no charge. Here you're browsing. You can't just take the object home and do whatever you want with it. You can look at it to decide whether you want to buy it. But why are you a shoel? So if you remember from the shiurim, my argument is you have two different versions of this shoel approach, and I'll just say them outside. One approach is that of the Ran in Nedarim and Tosafos Rid, who argue that essentially shoel is someone who gets to use an object, and they get or not gets to use an object. Shoel is someone who has all the benefit in a relationship. They're getting all the hana for no charge, and here you get the benefit of investigating this object, which is a very good deal, right? It's an attractive buy. You get the benefit of investigating this object, and he doesn't make you pay for that benefit. And there, in such a case, the Torah imposes the liability of shoel on you. When you get all the benefit in a deal, you are a shoel. And that's why you're chayev. That's this approach. Now, one question on the shoel approach is the requirement of a set price. Why, if I'm just borrowing the object, right? If I'm not even paying for it, I'm not buying it, why does it need to be a set price? I can borrow an object even if I don't know how much I would have to pay for it. Right? That's the question. How do you explain that Gemara in Bava Basra? So what the Ron says is that, look, you don't get to use this object, right? So you're not a real borrower here. You're not a pure shoel. Shoel gets to use the object, you don't. So the benefit that you get from it is that you have the choice whether or not you want to buy it. You're looking at this object, and it's totally in your hands whether you want that object or not. If there's no set price, so you can't even approach that benefit, right? You're never gonna, you don't know if you can buy it. It might be a very attractive piece of merchandise, but you might not ever have the chance to buy it. Maybe he'll say it's really expensive. Therefore, we require a set price, and that's what gives you the benefit of shoel. So that's approach number one. However, what I argued was that the Mefarish Nedarim has it a bit differently, that it's not that you're a pure shoel, but rather it's a self-imposed shoel. Meaning, it's not the Torah imposes this obligation on you, it's that because you are, anxious to buy this object, you accept liability in exchange for the opportunity to sort of investigate it and decide whether or not you want to buy it for yourself. As Zed mentioned, if you sure him, you get first dibs on this, right? Like, now it's before anyone else can buy it, you get to buy it, right? So that benefit, you say, okay, look, if you're going to let me look at your object, fine, so then I'll accept liability on it. Okay, that's the shoel approach. What about the lokeach approach? So the reason you wouldn't say that you're a shoel is simply because, again, you don't get to use the object, right? But how do you understand that you're a buyer if you haven't even bought it yet? Okay, so actually I'm going to argue three perspectives here, and then we'll sort of go through them. So perspective one, and this is the Kilas Yaakov's analysis in Nedarim Simachot Dalid, the first perspective is that when you pick up this object, although you haven't decided whether or not you want to buy it, you pick it up and you're making a kinyan al tanai. You're saying, I want to buy this object on condition that after investigating it, I decide that it's for me, that it's the type of object I wanted. And that's essentially what the Sma says in source number 9. It's a kinyan al tanai. And the chiddush is, the innovative idea, is that you, when you make a kinyan with a condition attached to it, until we see that the condition has not been met, we assume that you have bought the object. That's the way tanaim work. We assume that acquisition goes through until that condition is not met. right? That's one approach to lokayach. Okay, the more extreme approach, and that's what the Kiyos Yaakov sees in source number 10 in this run, is that it's not that you're lokayach al tanai, you're lokayach gamor. You bought the object. You've decided that you want it when you pick it up. Essentially, you're just reserving the right to back out of the deal afterward. Meaning, it's a full kinyan. But kinyanim usually mean that both sides can't retract. Here, since you're still in that investigative stage, so you're leaving yourself the ability to back out of that kinyan. So it's completely yours right now. It's your object, right? That's where the Ron says that if you, for instance, if you are testing someone's animal out before Shabbos to see whether you want to buy it, during Shabbos, if you haven't made that decision yet, it's your animal and you're liable for any work that animal does because of Shvisas Behemto. It's yours. It's just that you leave the right afterward to back out of the deal. And that's the assumption. However, I think a much, you know, maybe I think a more compelling approach and less extreme is what I like to argue the Yad Raman, the Rimigashe, which is as follows. You're not a buyer, right? But we understand that when you pick up an object off the shelf, you have some sort of connection to that object. You're not quite a buyer, but you have, you know, maybe you're, I would say, a quasi-lokeya. You're somewhat of a buyer. You're picking it up with the intention of investigating it and then deciding later that you might want it. So you have a certain priority, but you're not a full-on buyer. If you look at the Rimi Gash in source number 13, I like the way he says it at the end there. He says, Avavada ibay halokeach la'adure matzi mahadrile d'halabatoras kinag bahu d'shakle elavikure d'shakle. Right? If you want to retract, you can, because you didn't pick it up as a kinyon hagbah. You weren't being kone it. You were investigating it. You were picking it up in order to investigate it. So three approaches then in lokeach. Are you a full lokeach who gets to retract later? Are you a lokeach al tanai, a conditional buyer, and just the halachically, until that condition isn't met, we give you responsibility? Or neither, you're browsing. That's what you are. There's a unique status in halacha of someone who goes into a store, picks up an object, and is still in that investigative process. Okay. So, but that all assumes, again, we lump all these sugyas together, meaning we put them all together, you require that it's a set price, and you require zvina harifa, right? You need everything. And why, let me just get back to that point, because I sort of missed it, according to the lokeach approach, that what you are doing is becoming a sort of buyer, it's hard to understand why the merchandise needs to be, as we said, zvina harifa. Why does it need to be, in according to the Gemara Nedarim, that it's a very attractive purchase. It's something that you really want. It shouldn't matter. Whether or not you want to buy it, you are buying it. So essentially, there are two approaches here. What the Rashba says is, for us to make this assumption that you're actually going to buy it, until proven otherwise, it needs to be that it's a very attractive buy. So that's one approach. However, the Yad Ramah gives it a bit differently. He says that, again, you're really sort of a quasi-lokeach, and you're accepting a big responsibility here. You're saying that because I want the chance to decide whether I want this object or not, I'm going to accept the liability for it in the meanwhile. If something happens to it, that's on me. Why would you do that? Only if it's a very good opportunity. If it's something that you could buy at a similar price somewhere else, and you're not losing anything, or you're not worried the seller will sell to anybody else, then you have no reason to accept that liability on yourself, right? So the Yad Ramah sort of paints this picture whereby it's really a give and take. The lokeach agrees to a certain responsibility because of the opportunity to buy the object. The mocher says, well, he's going to buy it. I allow him to do that, assuming he'll be able to eventually give it back to me. Okay. However, there are Rishonim who hold that there's really two different... That we shouldn't put these Gemaras together. There are two different things going on. One case is the case in Nedarim. The case in Nedarim, we mention the person, we mention this idea of needing kol hana'a shelo, needing it to be a very attractive buy. That's one type of halacha. The other halacha is the bava basra halacha, the halacha of buyer, of dam of ksuvim, you need a set price. And if you look in the source number 15, the Riffa really splits between the two sugyas. He says it depends. If you have a set price, even if it's not an attractive buy, then you'll still be chayiv because you are a lokeach. then you are a buyer. Since you have the opportunity to buy it or not, there's a set price already, you pick it up, he's selling it, then you're a lokeya. And you don't need to be a zmina harifa. If, however, it's not a set price, he hasn't told you how much he's selling it for, but it's a zmina harifa, then you're still a shoel. Because it's such an attractive buy, it's the opportunity to even investigate it creates the shoel in and of itself. That actually would be a very big, if you pass him like this, you wouldn't need both conditions. Similarly, if you look at the Rambam in source 16 and 17, you see that he categorizes the two cases. Case one of a person investigating an object and determining whether they want to buy it, and case two of someone who is buying an object either to gift it to their in-laws or to sell it to others, in two completely different halachos. He has 16 is Hilchos Mechira, which is about Kinyonim. Source 17 is in Hilchos Shluchim Vishuthin, which is about messengers, right? So the Evan Elzel essentially argues there are two completely different cases. The case in, again, Bava Basra, of someone who goes into a store, picks up an object off the shelf, that's Lokeach. And since that's Lokeach, but you haven't completely decided that you want to buy it yet, it requires a number of different things. You need the set price, it needs to be a Zvina Harifa, very attractive buy. That's when you're a lokeya. However, when you're buying something to sell it, you're not really a buyer. You're sort of what the Gemara calls sarsor. You're a middleman. You're a retailer. You're buying it to sell it. Now, generally, argues the Evan Ezel, or Rav Zalman Meltzer, generally, you're like a shomer sachar. If you're simply a middleman, you sell something for someone else, give them the cash, and take a cut just for your service, you're a shomer sachar. However, here, since the price is set, there's a set price, and you know how much it's going to cost. He argues you're essentially a souped up sort of super sarsor, and you have you're like a shoel, you have a greater responsibility. So essentially, the Rambam and the Ritva say it depends. Now, just quickly to finish this up, if you look at the table under source number 17, I went through a number of different ramifications for this question that we discussed. So if you look at the first little row over there, it says, "Ima mochar yachol lachazor." Can the seller retract? Can the seller decide, while you're looking at this object, no, I don't want to sell it to you anymore? So from the shoel perspective, you should be able to, as the Achronim note. You can tell someone, I don't let you borrow my object. You're not, and again, he's not really borrowing it. He's looking at it, and he has the liability of a borrower. So there's nothing to stop him from saying, you know what, I decided I actually don't want to sell it. However, if he's a buyer, if he has some sort of kinyan, acquisition of this object already, then you no longer have that right. So that would be nafkamina one. Okay, second question. Are you considered an owner in the meanwhile? And this could have a lot of ramifications, right? You are deciding whether or not to buy chametz. You haven't made a decision yet, and now it's Pesach. Who is liable for bayira b'alimatzeh on that object? From the shoel perspective, you should not be liable. Again, you have no acquisition of it. You're simply liable as a borrower. From the other two perspectives, it gets more complicated. If you're a lokeach gamor, right? So then I would say, then you should be liable, as Aran says. And maybe if it's lokeach al tanai, it sort of gets into sort of interesting questions. Well, what do we say in the meanwhile? However, you know, maybe if you take the Ritva Yad Ramah approach here, Rimagash approach, you're a quasi-lokayach. I don't know that you should be liable. I argue you shouldn't, right? You're browsing, which gives you certain rights, but it doesn't mean you actually own the object. Okay, case three. What if you take a number of different objects and investigate all of them, but you only want to buy one? You don't want to buy all of them. You're just looking to decide which one you want. To me, it would seem that as a shoel, you should be liable for all of them. You can borrow all of them. Why not? Nothing stopping you from doing that. However, it's hard to say you bought all of them when you clearly don't want to buy all of them. So it's an interesting question. Should you be liable for at least one of them? The Piskei Choshen's not sure. And I think it's sort of an open question for that last, can you be a quasi-lokeach on all of them? I'm not sure. Maybe yes, maybe no. Just read for the last two. There's a, what about Peturei Shmira? Are you considered a Shomer? Shomerim have certain Peturim, right? A Shomer is Pater in a case of Baal of Imo. If the owner of the object is working for the Shomer is Pater. Should that apply to someone who's looking at an object to decide whether or not they want to buy it? If you're a Shoel, presumably so. And it's certainly not if you're a Lokeach. And finally, Do you need to pick up the object with the intention of buying it? Do you need to say when you pick it up off the shelf, I have das Kone. I'm buying it with the thought in my head that I'm going to want it later. Again, this is actually Shulchan Aruch says that you do. That you're only going to be liable if you pick it up with the intention of acquiring it. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. The small wonder is, Mil, maybe that shouldn't be so. From the Shoah perspective, no reason you should need that. You don't need to have intention to make a kinyan. From the Lokeach perspective, it's very understandable why you would. You're not a Lokeach al Tanai unless you make a kinyan al Tanai. And certainly you're not a Lokeach Gamor unless you do a kinyan Gamor. However, according to the Rimigash, what he essentially says is you don't have to pick it up and say, I want to buy this object. But you pick it up with the intention of investigating it. That's why you pick it up. That already establishes a certain connection to it. But I don't know that you should need das kinyan. Okay, that's all that first question in terms of are you considered a buyer or not. So back to our first question, we need to know, is there a set price on this esrog or is there not a set price on this esrog? Number two, is it a very attractive esrog or it's sort of a run-of-the-mill esrog you could get just if you go out to the shuk? These are the type of questions you would need to know to answer the first aspect of this question. But then we get to the second aspect of this question, which is as follows. Let's say you're not a locale, you're not a shoel. The bottom line is you slipped and dropped the guy's esrog. Why shouldn't you be liable for damages? You damaged his esrog. Okay, so you'll tell me, well, I didn't mean to slip. It's inadvertent. So that gets into the second topic that we discussed, which is the topic of accidental damages in halacha. And so the starter for this discussion is in from our perspective, from the Bava Metzia perspective, is that of source number 18, something Rabbi Tarchino discussed in his shir yesterday in terms of lifnim mishur esadin, going beyond the letter of the law in relating to the porters who damage your object. But the Gemara first discusses the shur esadin, the letter of the law, in terms of people who damage your object if they drop it. So I'll just read the Gemara in source 18, which discusses the background for this case. Says the Mishnah, Maver chavis mi makom lo makom mishavra. A person is carrying an object from one place to another, transporting an object, and they break it. Tanakhama says, Bein shomer chino, bein shomer sachar yishava. Okay, according to the first opinion, whether they are getting paid for their services or not, they take an oath, a shavua, and they don't have to pay. Rabbi Lezer omer zevze yishava. Oh, Zevze Yishava. Rabbi Lezer says they both have to take a Shavua. You're right. But to me, I'm Yechol and Zevze Yishava. I don't understand why. Essentially, that's what I heard. I had that Mesorah. I had that tradition. But I don't understand why they should both take a Shavua. So the Gemara elaborates on this idea. L'meimra d'savar Rabbi Meir nikala poshiyahu. Does this mean to say that Rabbi Meir thinks that if you stumble and drop an object, that's not considered negligence? We quote a Gemara in Bava Kama, which we dealt with at length when we first learned this topic, where Rabbi Meir says as follows, if a person drops their jug and they don't remove it, even though they slipped when they drop the barrel, and, you know, slipping is sort of something that they didn't mean to do, nevertheless, they're liable for any damage dropping that barrel causes. So clearly, Rav Meir thinks that it is a problem. And we established that the reason that Rav Meir thinks you're liable for slipping and dropping the barrel is because he holds that slipping and falling is considered negligence. If so, why is Rav Meir saying here that the person who's carrying the barrel and slips is absolved simply with an oath? He should have to pay. So now the Gemara gives two different answers, okay? So Amar Rav Elazar, Tavra Misha Sanazu Lo Shanazu. First answer, you're right. It's a contradiction. And it has to be that we have two different opinions of Rav Meir. The opinion, one opinion says Rav Meir thinks Nikal is Poshaya. One opinion says no, Nikal is not Poshaya. That's how you solve this. It's actually a contradiction. And then the Gemara elaborates on the other opinions. Va'asr Yehuda Lameimar, Yehuda says, Shomer Chinon Yishava. I understand that if you're not getting paid to transport the object, you take a Shvua. Because a Shomer Chinon is Potter from Geneva Va'aveda. No, it's just off your shalim. Hi, kadine, the hi, kadine. Ravuda argues that slipping isn't considered carelessness. However, it's also, you're not, you know, it's also, you're somewhat at fault. It's like Geneva Vaveda. It's sort of your fault. Therefore, a shomer sachar who has greater liability does have to pay for slipping and dropping the object. That's Rabbi Yehuda. And then we have Rabbi Eliezer, and it's worth going through because it actually very much affects the practical halacha here. So Rabbi Eliezer says, this is the fourth line in 18, I believe. One, two, three, four, fifth line. Vas Rabbi Eliezer in Gemar Kermeir. You know what? I have a Mesorah like Kermeir. I don't understand how both a Shomer Chinam and a Shomer Sachar can take a Shvuah and get out of this. The Shomer Chinam can swear he wasn't negligent. How can the Shomer Sachar swear? Even if he was negligent, he still has to pay for a case when he wasn't negligent, as long as it wasn't an ones. And even Shomer Chinam, right? If it's a Shomer Chinam, I understand why he's exempt with a Shvua, if it's a slanted terrain where one is liable to trip and fall. So then I get it. If you're just walking on a straight terrain and you slip, can you really say you were negligent? Well, of course you were negligent. Why else did you slip? Why should you slip if it's a perfectly straight terrain? He says, and even b'mako madron, even if it is a slanted path where you might slip, he says, if people witness what happened, you should be able to bring those witnesses. We shouldn't rely on your shvuah. Right? Yisrael ben Yehuda says that if something happens when you're in public and people should have witnessed what happened, you don't have the right to take a shvuah shomrim and exempt yourself. Okay, so that's, we have a three of machlokas here. But till now, Rav Meir in our Mishnah says, nitkal, someone who slips, off the hook, not their fault, ones, you know, you can't expect people to look where they're going. That's sort of, people don't do that. They just sort of think about sugyos and bava mitzio while they're walking. They don't look ahead of them. That's not your fault. Rabbi Huda says it's like geneva v'aveda. And we have Rabbi Eliezer, who, let's say for now, we're not sure about. Then the Gemara says as follows. So it says Rabbi Yochanan, no. Rabbi Meir agrees that it's your fault for slipping. That's certainly your fault. Why does he let you get away with his shvuah? It's for tikkun olam. We want people to volunteer to carry barrels for their friends and help transport cargo. If every time someone drops an object, you'll say they have to pay, no one's ever going to do that. Who would volunteer or even get paid to transport an item if they know if they slip? Then they're going to be liable. So we make a takanas chachamim, you know, a rabbinical institution, arguing that they take a shvuah, that they didn't break it on purpose, as the Gemara here, and therefore they are exempt. Okay, so how do we paskin generally? What is the halacha here in regard to someone who drops a barrel while they slip? So this gets to be a discussion of who do we actually paskin like in this Gemara. Most Rishonim understand we paskin like nobody. We don't paskin like any opinion. They're all wrong. We have to sort of combine factors here. Why? We paskin that someone who slips is not poshea, right? We paskin that it's not considered carelessness to slip. Therefore, so we can't take Rav Meir's opinion because he thinks nikal's poshea. We also paskin like this takanas chachamim. And the other two opinions don't seem to have this takanas chachamim. So we're stuck. What do we do? So most Rishonim say we combine the shitos, right? And what ends up happening is you're essentially, if you are a Shomer Chinam, you're always going to be exempt for slipping because we say that you can take a shvua. That's one approach. However, the Ritva says something different. If you look at source number 20 for 19, he says, I don't understand. What's Rabbi Lezer saying here? Lezer says, well, I have a Mesorah. I have a tradition like Rav Meir that they both get off the Shvuah, but I don't understand how. Says the Ritva, if there's a Takanas Chachamim, if the rabbis made a rule that because of Tikkun Olam, someone who transports an object and slips is exempt, what's Rav Elazar complaining about? Is he saying, I don't have a tradition that there is a Takanas Chachamim? But you have the tradition that they're exempt, so just assume, okay, so that must be the tradition. Either it's a Takana or not. It's strange for him to say, I don't have the tradition that there is a Takana. So says the Ritva, no. What Rav Elazar is saying is as follows. It's not that he has the Takana, but he says, I think, I understand that the Takana is only if you were in Poshea. The Chachamim don't come to save someone who is negligent. They only come to save the porter who was not negligent, who something, you know, was at fault, but not completely at fault. Therefore, says Rav Elazar, if you're on a straight terrain and you slip, the Takanas Chachamim doesn't help you. Because that's your fault. Chacham never held someone, prevented someone from liability if they're Poshea. They only stopped someone from liability if it wasn't your fault, if you were going down a hill and then you slip. So then the Chacham make an institution. They say you can take a Shvua that you're Potter. But that's the only Takana. And the Ritva actually poskins like the Rav Elazar. He says, therefore, and practically Lach L'maisa, we had two different opinions. If you look at source number 20 and 21, the Ritva argues in the Meiri here, as to whether or not practically you should be liable if you walk on a terrain which is not slanted, on straight terrain. So according to the Ritva, we pass like Rav Elazar, Rabbi Eliezer thinks that if you slip on straight terrain, that's your fault and you're liable, therefore you would be liable in such a case. However, the Meiri says, no, we don't passen like Rabbi Eliezer, he's wrong, we don't really passen like everybody, we just think there's a Takanas Chachamim, and no matter the terrain, you're going to be liable. Okay, you're going to be exempt, excuse me. So at this point, we go back to our poor chap in the store looking at his esrog, and it should be dependent upon this argument, right? Assuming there was no hills in the store, which usually is the case, right? Usually stores are made of straight terrain, so the Ritva would tell you it's your fault, because if you slip on straight terrain, that's Pshia, and then you're liable. Whereas the other opinion would be that no, that you're not liable because you have a Takanas Chachamim. However, it gets a bit more complicated than that, because if you look, for instance, at source number 22 and 23, we have the Torah. Now, the Torah says, in the context of porters, that you are liable if you slip on a straight path, because that's negligence, in accordance with the opinion of the Ritva. However, there are, as we noted, there are many different contexts of Nikal Poshea, this idea of whether someone should be held as liable for slipping and damaging is discussed in the context of both an employer who is an employee who's carrying an object. It's discussed in terms of someone who drops an object while they slip. It's also discussed in terms of someone who steps on someone else's object while they slip. And the Torah never distinguishes between a straight versus a crooked path in any other context except for that of a porter. Otherwise, he thinks Nikal's never poshea. You're never at fault for slipping, whether it's straight terrain, not straight terrain. The question is why. So what we suggested is maybe you can distinguish between somebody who is an employee relationship, who's working for someone else, versus who has a higher degree, a higher duty of care, because that's their job, versus someone who is simply minding their own business and accidentally slips and damages someone. Maybe you can hold them less liable in such a case. However, it is not clear that is legitimate, because we have a rule, generally, that the opposite seems to be true. We say, Adam Muad La'olam. And that's what you see here in source number 24. We say a person is liable, Adam Muad La'olam, Ben Shogeg, Ben Mezid, Ben Ar, Ben Yashin, right? A person is always liable, whether it's by accident or on purpose, whether they're awake or asleep. You're always liable. We learn if Tzitzchiskiya from Petzatachas Potza Lachai V'la Shogeg K'mezid V'omus K'ratzon. We hold you liable whether it was an accident, whether it was compelled, whether you were sleeping, whether you were awake. Which begs the question then, whether or not you think it's your fault, it's someone's fault for slipping, or not, it shouldn't make a difference, because Adam Muad La'olam. So how does any of this discussion make sense? So we certainly should hold this person liable in the store, because Adam Ulolam, you're always liable for damages. However, we have another source which sort of seems to mitigate this idea of Adam Muad La'olam, and that is source number 25, where the Gemara, to make a long story short, you look at the bold here, it's, the case is somebody is transporting a barrel, their own barrel, and they're holding it, and then all of a sudden, out of thin air, the barrel snaps into two just by its own. The person's left holding the handle in their hand. And the Gemara says, Amai Anasuv Anas Rachmana Patre. The Gemara says, in such a case, if you damage someone in that case when you're holding a barrel, you're certainly not liable, because that's Ones. That's an uncontrollable circumstance. The Torah absolves you from all cases of Ones. So, on the one hand, we have this idea of Adam Ulolam, but we have this Gemara in source number 25, and again, Bava Kama Kavches HaMedal and Ches HaMebez, which suggests that that's not true. There are, indeed, exceptions to Adam Muad La'olam. This brings us to the argument between Tosfos and the Ramban. Just if you scroll down to this source number 30, I sort of briefly summarize the Shitos for you. So, there are two extremes, are Tosfos and Ramban, as I said. Tosfos in Bava Metzias says, Adam Muad La'olam is a bit of a misnomer. It doesn't mean a person's always liable. So shouldn't really say la'olam, it should say lifa'amin. A person is sometimes liable. Says Tosfos, number one, if it's totally out of your control, you're not liable. Says Tosfos, not only that, even if you are at fault, in most cases where it wasn't totally your fault, you're going to be exempt. The only case you're chayev is either, obviously, pshia, when you were negligent, when you really should have been more careful and that would cause damage, or what he says is, Ones ke'en aveda, right? We have in Shmira, there's a, something called Geneva va'aveda, that a shomer chinam is exempt from a case where either the object was lost or stolen. But we know that when an object is stolen, it's a bit less your fault than when the object is sort of lost, when you just lose track of that object. They're two different cases. Aveda is certainly more your fault than Geneva. Says Tosfos, and again, how to evaluate each case is sort of, you know, up to the judge. But Tosfos says, you're only going to be chayav, it's an ones ke'en aveda, where it's basically negligence. Basically your fault, but not, you weren't quite careless. Again, how to define aveda would be difficult. But that's Tosfos' shita. And therefore, all the cases in the Gemara which seem to say that you're not exempt, that you're exempt from damages, the case where you drop the barrel, the case where you're walking in the street and someone stops suddenly in front of you and you damage them or their object, the case where you're sleeping and the Yerushalmi says if you're in bed and someone gets into bed next to you and you don't even know that they're there and then you hurt them, all those cases, you're exempt. Why? Simply because Adam Muad La'olam doesn't mean La'olam. It means sometimes. You're sometimes liable. But whenever it wasn't your fault, you're not going to be liable. Okay? The Ramban, on the other extreme, says no. You're always liable. Adam Muad La'olam means no matter what, a person who is an Adam Amazik is liable for all situations regardless of fault. And what we'll have to do is briefly go through how the Ramban deals with all the exceptions to that rule. There seem to be many exceptions in which you're not liable. And in the middle, we had two different sort of less extreme shitos. On the one hand, you had the Rivat in the Shita Mikubetz Bava Kama, who says, like Tosfos, that there are exceptions in a case of Onsin. But he says, no, in a case of Geneva and Aveda, in a case of where, again, it's not totally out of your control, but you also weren't totally negligent, we still say you're at fault. But you're punished for all onsin. That's the opinion of the Riva. The Nemuka Yosef says that, no, that you're liable for every case except for what he calls ones gamor. I take a look at source number, just to demonstrate, it's 27. Nemuka Yosef says, ones tuba ones from an apatre, right? Kidalfia minara villanaarelo tasadavar. Bedaka ba'ones gamor. That's only if it's a complete ones. Delo matzi liyune. He couldn't have checked. Delo lisra hayazeka. There's no way he could have prevented this damage. Avahecha davi matzi liyune chayiv. If there was a way that he potentially could have prevented it, then you are liable. Dechye gadavadi rabi rachamana ones karatzon lechayuva. in an audience where you could have potentially prevented it. So you could have stopped this. Maybe you shouldn't have gone up on the roof to begin with, because it was already a Ruach Shehinah Mitsuya. So then the Muk Yosef will say that you're liable. So you're not putter from all onsen, you're only putter from ones gamor. What are all these opinions arguing about? That's the big question. Why should Adam Mamazik be putter or not putter? Sometimes, not all the time. So what we suggested from many Achronim, and the Rav has it here, if you look in your source sheet, is the question is, what is the basis of holding someone liable for damages? Right, meaning generally, we don't attribute a Maisa to you unless you have some sort of Kavana, right? But here, we're holding someone liable even if they didn't intend to cause the damage. Why? The Tosfos seems to assume that essentially you're like a Shomer on yourself. Just as a Shomer has an obligation to prevent the object from getting damaged, a person has to stop themselves from damaging. That's the idea. It's not about what you did. It's about, was the damage your fault or was it not your fault? Should we attribute it to you or should we not attribute it to you? Therefore, Tosfos says, if it's an ones, certainly it's not your fault. We can't say you should have guarded yourself from damaging in the case of ones. There's nothing you could have done. And even in the case of Geneva Vaveda, the question is, how strong is your responsibility to stop yourself from damaging? Should we compare you to a Shomer Sachar? As the Riva says, the person has the same liability as a Shomer Sachar. Tosfos in Bava Metzia goes further. You're more like a Shomer Chinam. You don't even have the liability of a Shomer Sachar. But that's Tosfos's. For Tosfos, the question is, whether you're liable or not, was it your fault? Should you have stopped this damage from occurring? It's not about what you did. Is this damage attributable to you? That's essentially the argument of Tosfos. We shouldn't distinguish. So going back to our question for the Torah, right? There's no need to distinguish really fundamentally between someone who is an employer and someone who is just holding their own barrel. It's all the same. Was it your fault or not? That's the question. And I think you could argue that the Torah might say that it's more your fault when you have a job to take care of the object than it is when you're just walking innocently. Anyways, that's the first approach. The Ramban says no. That's not the idea. Adam HaMazik is a different idea than simply a Shomer. The Torah is mechayev you for any action that you perform which causes damage to others. Anything that you do. But, says the Ramban, it's a very particular legal category of Adam HaMazik, right? It has to be that you are the damaging party in this relationship. It's you who was the Mazik. If we can say that because of the context of the case, you are not categorized legally as Adam HaMazik, so then you won't be liable. And to that end, what we did was, and I'm not going to go, obviously, this is a Chazara Shir, we can't go through every case, but if you remember, I briefly summarized all the exceptions to Adam Mu'ad La'olam and why the Ramban would say you're not Pater. So, idea number one is, certain cases are, it's the Nizak was Poshea Ba'atmo. You can't call me the Mazik, because the person I damaged was equally liable and negligent. So, in one number, if you look at 1A, the Yerushalmi, which says that the Mazik is exempt if someone lies next to them in bed and they're damaged in the process, it's because you damaged yourself by getting into bed while I was already there. That's your fault. It's not my fault. The case where somebody leaves a jug in the middle of the street or you stop suddenly. Again, that's not my fault. You damaged yourself. I can't be called a Mazik. And I think the argument for this can be twofold. Either, generally, in Mazik, we try to determine the primary cause of damage. And you can make the argument that in these cases, the Mazik, quote-unquote, wasn't the primary cause of damage. We attribute the cause of damage to the Nizok. Alternatively, and this will help us later, for the next category, the idea might be that you have to have an Adam HaMazik in order to invoke Adam HaMazik and Adam Mu'ad La'olam. There needs to be a clear distinction between the victim and the mazik, the one who causes the damage. There needs to be a clear category of nizok, the victim. However, in a case where someone is poshea ba'atma, they are no longer a nizok. They cannot be seen as a victim because they brought about their own damage. And that, I think, is related to the second category. The second category for the Ramban, and those who hold it the Ramban, that Adma Mazik is generally chayav, is that in certain cases, you have the right to do what you are doing. You have the permission to perform the act which caused the damage. Right? Meaning, usually in Mazik, we say, you might not have meant to perform that act, but even though you didn't mean to, since you did it accidentally, and you had no right to do that action, you're liable. But in certain cases, you had permission to do the act which caused the damage. Big category number one, this is very relevant, Lamaisa, is employees. In the case of an employee, the employer tells the employee to do what they're doing. The porter has to carry the barrel. A doctor is meant, or a surgeon, is meant to perform an operation on their patient. They're doing it for the good of the patient. In that case, you can't categorize that person as a mazik because of the context of the relationship. I can't be a mazik if I'm just trying to help the nizok. If the nizok told me to do it, that's not a mazik. And we saw, and if you look at 2b over there, the interesting case in Bava Kama, Kufya Bet Amin Aleph, which talks about the case where the children accidentally consume a cow. They slaughter and eat the cow, which their father borrowed. Where the Kiyos Yaakov explains, they had legal authority to assume that that cow was their father's because it was in his possession. They didn't tell them otherwise. And the halacha says, you're allowed to make that to assume that. Therefore, when you have rishus, you're not liable. Just briefly, also mention the Rambam, who says that when it's in rishus hamazik, right, when you're on the mazik's territory, and the mazik gets to act normally on their own territory, also, that's another idea of misasik b'rishus. And finally, the last idea, which gets back to our case, where you slip and fall, so there it's a question of, is it considered adam hamazik, or is it considered another damage? In order for it to be adam hamazik, that you damage, we have to attribute the damage to your force. It's your koach which caused that damage. And the Rishonim say, when you stumble and the thing falls, that's not halachically considered your force. It's the stumbling block, the takala, which caused it. It wasn't you. It might be bor, it might be ish, but it's not adam hamazik. And that's how the Ramban deals with all these cases. So sort of summarize it succinctly. For Tosfos, in every case, the question to ask is, was it your fault? For Ramban, you ask two questions. Are you considered adam hamazik? If you are, and if you're not, then we can start getting into questions of fault. So just to sort of briefly give a few examples of where this plays up, if you look at source number 32 through 34, essentially the question is, what if we have a case which is an ones gamur, but you don't have any of these pturim? You weren't doing it with permission, it's your koach, all those things don't apply. So the case we discussed actually was, actually relevant to me right now, is that of a pregnant woman who gets into a taxi cab and unfortunately delivers in the cab and damages the cab in the process, right? So not her fault, assuming that she wouldn't have anticipated that, not her fault, uncontrollable. But you can't really say she was doing it for she wasn't working for the cab driver, right? You can't say that. Poshea ba'atzmo, he might have had no idea that was going to happen. So that might be an example. All these cases, really, it's just a question of how you look at it. And we discuss cases of where people enter into the relationship, meaning wrestling, where you sort of assume that you're going to get hurt. So, you know, that is that ones gamur? Is that poshea ba'atzmo? All those factors are relevant. So again, going back to our poor chap in the Esrog store who drops the Esrog, number one, we have to determine, should it be lokeach or shoal? Should we invoke that din? Is there a set price for it? Is it a zvina harifa? And number two, should we consider him a mazik? That really might depend here on whether Nikal is poshea or not poshea. We posit that Nikal is not poshea. However, and therefore, the Ramban would probably tell you your putter because it's not you that caused the damage. It's not Adam Ul Olam, it was the Takala. Okay, anyways, next week, thank you very much for joining us. I hope that was informative and a good review. Next week on Wednesday, we're going to have one last year of the Zman, which is a bit of more of an agadaic topic of Rish Lakish of Yochanan and the limits of him, of Machlokas. It's a very compelling, fascinating Gemara. And thank you for joining. Everybody have a wonderful Shabbos.
Yes, thank you very much. Have a good Shabbos.
A great Shabbos. Yishka.